You are now listening to Off-Rim.
Hello, everybody. My name is Samuel Pierman, and I'm joined here with two comrades, making us the Three Stooges, with Brody.
Yo, what's up, y'all? How y'all doing today?
What you drinking, man?
I got a caramel frappe.
That looks
from McDonald's.
Good. And who is this guy?
It's me.
Who?
That's not a...
Are you Golden Freddy?
I'm Kieran.
Wait, what's going on here?
I'm the host of the show, but I was sick on Monday, so I'm not doing that.
Well, this isn't the show. Get it right.
I know. This is Off the Rails.
Yeah.
And
his,
I am
his
here
show
for
is called The Show.
It is called The Show.
You guys should all check it out. Everybody should check it out.
That's yep, 9:15 to 10 on Mondays, except for this week.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, I had to run
that music.
Man.
Gotta get it in.
Sam, you were on it, so you got an off-the-rails plug on there.
Fair enough. Well, today I got something very important to talk to you guys. You guys heard the reference I made a moment ago, right? Three Stooges?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just making sure you guys knew.
When I think of Three Stooges, I think of the Mickey Mouse one.
What?
The Three Stooges, Mickey Mouse, Donald, and Goofy movie?
You mean the Musketeers?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that was such a good movie.
That was such a good movie. Movies.
Watching it as a kid, I always wanted to do the thing that, what's his name did? In the movie where he, like, licked his fingers and tuned out a candle?
I always wanted to figure out
how to do that.
I tried that once,
I bet
and
that
I
hurt.
Immediately regretted it.
Did you at least make the candle go out?
It went out, but not because of my fingers. It was because I knocked the candle over.
Absolute goofball.
What was that sound effect?
Goofer.
I never heard that before.
That's the Scooby laugh. We got a whole list of sound effects here. Trust
me. And I have to hear them still.
Yeah, you want to hear all of them at once?
Don't do that, actually.
Not last year.
When it calls for it.
But Ryan did that once. It was not a cool thing. But it was funny sounding, so that's all that matters. But I want to talk to you guys about some movies. Have you guys gone to see any recent movies?
Yes.
Yes.
I did the doubleheader, the big doubleheader of the year. I did Barbenheimer.
Was it good? I haven't seen them.
I love Oppenheimer and Barbie's good. I mean, everybody loves Barbie. I'm just like, it's good. It's a good movie. I'm not gonna say it's a horrible movie or it's an okay. It's a good movie.
Ryan Gosling, man, I wish I was that man.
Mm. I think anybody would wish you were Ryan Gosling.
Oh, absolutely. 100. Have you seen the dude?
People beg him to be on movies. I wish I could be begged to be on movies.
He is...
Margot Robbie had to persuade him by giving him gifts every day.
Yeah, which I find hilarious because...
It's Margot Robbie.
It's Margot Robbie. She's an incredible actress. It would make sense, right? Like, Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, they're two of the biggest actors of, like, the decade, actually.
Yeah. Two peas in a pod. Makes
exactly.
sense. Throw them both in the
and then
same
they
movie.
Go, and then they throw them both together, and then it's perfect.
Right.
And then John Cena was in it.
John Cena was in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, John Cena was in it as a mermaid.
As a
merman.
Merman. That is...
But yeah, I wanted to do the Barbenheimer double feature there, but I couldn't make it.
I think I got... I did it, but
no,
I did it super late.
So I was going there for a friend of mine's birthday. We had a whole thing planned out. We were going to go in full three-piece suits for Barbie, and then we were going to change into just, like...
Wax.
We were going to change into hipster clothes to watch Oppenheimer.
Like, bright magenta shorts.
Oh, yeah. We were going to do it. We were basically going to switch the outfits up. Yeah.
Backwards.
So we could watch them both backwards. And then then something came up. I got sick.
Oh.
I know. Shocker, right? But then I had to work. It was a whole mess. Like, we had planned it out months in advance, and then we realized, oh, wait a minute, we had the dates wrong.
Oh, you know what you got? You got...
Denied.
I did.
Big time.
But biggest one, most recent movie I actually went to the theater for was, I think, Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse
is so good.
It was
incredible.
Greatest movie that I have seen yet.
Yeah.
In terms of storytelling and visuals, it was... incredible.
And they're going to be making another one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a two-part story.
Relatively quick.
It's not going to be real. I swear it won't be relatively quick.
They said at the end of the movie that it was going to be March 2025.
2024. It'll be March 2024.
Yeah, 24. And then they realized, like, after the movie that
animation is hard?
No, not even that. Haley Steinfeld hadn't even recorded her lines for the other movie yet.
Oh.
Which is a,
yeah, you kind of need those.
Ridiculous. You kind of need those for, it's like, to make the animated movie.
It's like you should have the script ready for the, yeah, for the, you should write the whole script for the both movies at one time.
They were originally making it all in one movie, but they realized very quickly that it was basically going to end up being like a 4-hour movie.
Yeah.
They cut it in half, and then they didn't record the second half of the movie yet. But did you see the one scene in that movie that was animated by a 14-year-old?
It was the Lego
movie. The Lego movie,
yeah,
movie was done by one kid. He's, that's 14. Dope. And it was so unreasonably good.
Yeah. He probably spent
that
months
kid,
on that.
So here's the thing. That same kid is currently actively on YouTube remaking pretty much the entire movie in Lego.
Yeah. Didn't That's he crazy. Also remake, like, what got him into the gig was he remade the trailer.
He remade
in Lego,
the trailer in Lego.
And the movie act producers were like, this guy right here knows what he's doing. And yeah, he's just 14.
Yeah. Like, and then they were like, hey, we already have most of the movie done. What if we just made a little extra scene and we got him in for it?
Right.
And
so they threw him in when spoiler warning for people who haven't seen the movie.
It's been like 5 months, I think.
Like, they should have seen the movie at this point. But, like, either way. Yeah. I didn't see Endgame for another 2 weeks after it came out, so I was, like, immediately spoiled with it. But, so, if in the scene where Spot has, like, just figured out how he can travel across multiverses.
And he gets, mm-hmm, like, really powerful.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He goes through a bunch of universes. Like, one of them was the universe that Venom, the movies, take place in.
Yeah.
He popped in there at one point.
And it was the lady at the
I think her name was Chen. But he pops through there, pops into a few other universes. One of them's animated like a Disney movie. One of them's animated like the comics, like the vintage 60s comics. And then there was one universe that they had only added in like a couple months before they released the movie, just because they saw this kid's remake of the trailer.
That's so cool.
That is.
And so he animated a shot in the movie, and it was like a Lego New York skyline with the Lego Daily Bugle. Yeah. And then he got into the movie, and it was incredible, because it's just this is a kid that got into a multi-billion-dollar production because he made a fan project.
Right. But yeah, that was, yeah, congrats to him.
Yeah,
man.
So props to that kid.
Wonder how much money he made off that too.
He probably still makes royalties.
Oh yeah.
He'll make royalties for the rest of his life.
He's nuts. He already makes a ton off of YouTube, so mm-hmm, he's making bank now.
So, congrats to that kid. I don't know what your name is, but congrats. Yeah. That's really cool. But I want to talk about a little bit about the Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel quantity over quality issue now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big problem.
That's such a big problem in superhero movies right now.
Yeah.
Is the reason Iron Man was so successful because it was I wouldn't say it's a passion project, but they took their sweet, sweet time with that.
Oh, it was good.
And they took it and they made it their baby and they made it the way they wanted to make it. Because it was just a do-or-die film.
Yeah.
It was a do-or-die film for Marvel.
Another thing, I think the reason that did so phenomenally at the box office,
yeah,
is it was a rare occurrence to get a good comic book movie at that time, right? It was a diamond in a sea of gravel. That's what it was.
Right.
And it was a good movie. The effects were on point, the writing, the acting, it was all good.
And Robert Downey Jr. as the freaking Iron Man was such a good pick because he looked like him.
Yeah,
he looks exactly like him. He is him.
He was talking
in an interview. He's like, you know, I never really had to step out of who I actually am to be Tony Stark. Yeah. He's like, for this Oppenheimer movie, I had to actually, you know, act.
He had to act.
Because he didn't have to act, because that's who Robert Downey Jr. is, pretty much Tony Stark without the problems.
A thing that
he's the charismatic millionaire.
Yeah.
I think that the director,
Jon Favreau.
Yeah, Favreau, because he's also Happy Hogan in mm-hmm. that. Something that he said in an interview is that he wrote the character of Iron Man. He wrote Tony Stark in that movie around Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
as a person, which I think was a fantastic choice.
I guess because it just fits. And James Gunn did the same thing with Chris Pratt.
Gunn did the same thing for Star-Lord and Chris Pratt, which rewrote the entire character.
And now, and they rewrote the entire comic book series.
Yeah.
Because now the comic book, because people love Guardians so much, the comic book adapted to what the movies are.
Which is something that I have never once
seen.
No. Yeah, so the way that it usually has worked is it's been the movies adapted the comics, right? Mm-hmm. And they do a pretty okay job of it most of the time. It's hard to be exactly accurate to the comic, right?
Yeah, because there are some details that just don't really either mesh. Are too complicated or so simple it's like anyone can understand it.
Yeah, and then the comics, they realized at Marvel Comics how well the movie did because of these new characterizations of these characters. And they were like, huh, you know what? How about we switch things up? And then the comics adapted the movie for what is a very rare occurrence.
And that's just a tribute. Really nice. That's just a tribute to James Gunn's expertise in movies.
And specifically superhero movies.
Like, because now isn't he running DC?
He's running DC right now. Yeah. And his first two movies in the new DCU were not...
I don't think he wrote The Flash. He didn't write The Flash, though.
He didn't do or direct The Flash. No.
Mm-hmm.
But he did do Blue Beetle, and Blue Beetle I have not seen
Blue Beetle, I heard, is amazing. I heard it's great.
Blue Beetle did not perform well.
I heard it's very good.
Which I think is a thing. People aren't expecting it to perform well. That was the problem with...
I don't think it was advertised well enough.
That's the problem with superhero movies now, is they're not being received well enough because people are getting tired of them.
Yeah. Right.
They
know now, because of how Marvel has been performing recently with their movies and not getting good writers or directors on their projects, they're tired of seeing bad superhero movies and wasting their money on them. So people aren't going to go out and watch a superhero movie when they know it could end up being hot garbage.
Exactly.
I feel like that's
however, Blue Beetle, from what I've heard, is one of the best superhero movies in recent time.
Wait, has it come out yet?
Yeah, it's out. It's been out for like a month.
Oh, really?
Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't. I want to. No. I'm going to wait till it comes out on Max.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to see it because Blue Beetle is probably one of my favorite heroes of the longest time.
Jaime is such a fun character.
Oh, yeah. Reyes is easily the best incarnation of Blue Beetle in the comics and in like the animated universe, which I think is like peak superhero media.
Is the animated movies?
DC's animated universes.
So good. The Batman movies?
They are
amazing.
DC. Because here's the thing. With DC's animated movies, they can just rip straight out of the comics.
Yeah.
They don't have to do like some big budget VFX to accurately represent a character in live action, because they're animators of people that like read the comics.
I feel like that's why Batman is so... always so well done, because Batman doesn't need a bunch of VFX, CGIs. He just needs good practical fights.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be super over the top.
Which I think is what...
I think that's what the Dark Knight movies did so well.
Yeah,
They didn't do super over the top stuff.
They didn't overwrite the character. They just made him who he is.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't.
And that's the thing I liked about... Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman.
You like Batman?
Ben Affleck's Batman, and that is based off of Tim Miller's Dark Knight Returns, just in terms of how he fights and how the costume's patterned, and it works. Because Ben Affleck, as Batman, he is a big dude.
Yeah, Ben Affleck is not a small dude.
Have you seen, so if you compare them, Superman in that movie... he's jacked, right? He's just... because it's Henry Cavill, right?
Yeah, Henry Cavill's
he got jacked for the role of Superman.
He's a big dude. He's swole, right? But Ben Affleck is built. Yeah. That's the difference, right? So there's the opening scene where you first see Batman. He is throwing people into walls. He's knocking skulls into the ground. It shows exactly, like, Batman will beat you within an inch of your life, but he's not going to kill you.
This Batman is... very hardened over time.
Yeah.
I mean, in that movie, in that Zyderverse. I mean, Robin's not there. I'm not gonna say, but Robin's gone because of the Joker. I think it was Jared Leto's Joker.
That was what they said.
Mm-hmm. He's gone.
We didn't get a Robin.
There's some theories that Jared Leto was the second Joker and it's Robin. I don't know.
Yeah. There is a thing for me. I have yet to see a good adaptation of Robin in live action. Mm, we have gotten too. Close. In The Dark Knight Rises, we got a character just named Robin, which I think was a little weird, a little on the nose, but he wasn't ever Robin.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing for me. And I know that The Dark Knight was not just supposed to be a trilogy. It was supposed to be five movies, mm-hmm. right? But Rises didn't do well after Heath Ledger died.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is...
tragic.
Yeah. It was unfortunate for just the industry as a whole and for... Nolan's trilogy, so he couldn't make any more of them without Ledger, because he was supposed to be a huge part of the fourth movie.
Yeah,
but
you can't recast
that important of a character.
Not after how good.
Well,
did you know there was a lot of backlash when Heath Ledger got that? Because Heath Ledger was a rom-com kind of guy. Before that movie, he was a rom-com 2000s. Teenage high school movie rom-com guy.
Was in rom-com.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Heath Ledger had mostly rom-com roles up to this point. He had barely... I think he had one action role, and he wasn't even the lead. He was an extra.
Ooh.
And then he gets cast as the Joker, and people are...
fuming.
Oh, yeah.
Not happy.
Not happy about it. And then they see him...
And they see the movie, and it's one of the best performances given... By an actor in a decade.
And it's the reason that he got so many awards for that role.
I know.
I think he got like four.
Four Emmys, probably.
Four Emmys. He got an Oscar for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whole bunch of stuff, man.
The best Joker since then. Well, there's only been two Jokers, but one of the best adaptations of the Joker was Joaquin Phoenix's too.
Yes,
Joaquin that movie
Phoenix's Joker
was, and it's not even about Batman, and I love that.
Yeah.
I don't need to see Batman and Joker. I just want to see Joker just because he's insane.
He is a good villain.
He's an awesome villain because it embodies the complete opposite of Batman. Batman is helping people
full conflict
by fighting a bunch of people. Joker's only reason for existence is to
fight Batman.
Fight Batman because he thinks it's funny.
Yeah,
and he's a terrible person. Joker is terrible, horrible villain.
Yeah.
Which movies that put emphasis on the villain to let you understand how, what's the word I'm looking for? Menacing?
Yeah.
How terrible they are. Which kind of leads me to Thor: Love and Thunder.
Oh no.
Yeah.
But I want.
Okay. Look. Here's my.
What's your opinion?
The movie.
If you say it's not bad, I'm gonna.
Watching it, it was kind of goofy.
I fell asleep.
I feel like most of the comedy in the movie was forced, and just the wrong kind of movie to force comedy.
Yeah, especially with the storylines.
With Christian Bale as Gore.
Yeah. Can I rant for a second?
How long is this rant going to be?
Not horribly long.
Okay, I think that you should rant.
In the comics, Gore the God Butcher is a multi-year long running villain. He is a threat, and it is put off as that. Like, they know he's a threat because he's killed three different versions of Thor at different points in time.
Yeah.
He's killed Null, the symbiote god. He's killed Zeus and Hercules, and they make it known he is the most dangerous threat that they have ever faced.
Yeah, he's like a bigger version of Thanos.
Yeah.
But... he's slightly smaller.
He was basically... physically. It was such a
he's more powerful than Thanos.
Yeah,
that is the problem I have.
They've downplayed that character
too. My problem with Marvel...
just one person
beating they him. Keep killing their villains.
They keep watering them down.
No, not even that. They just let them die. After one battle. The reason that the comics are so cool to me is because they know how powerful their villains are supposed to be. How powerful their heroes are, and how the villains are most of the time way stronger.
Yeah,
they let them go for multiple years. With movies, it's harder to do that. But then they make the bad decision.
Yeah, it's sorry to interrupt you, but that's kind of why Endgame and Infinity War just were so good. Was because Thanos kept making appearances throughout every single movie.
Come back.
You saw the development. You saw it all. Merged together, leading up.
That's what I think. I feel like, that's why I don't think Kang... I feel like Gore would have been so much better than Kang.
Exactly.
I feel like Kang would have been better for down the line.
Yeah.
When it gets more futuristic and more into more of the future.
I feel like a series that involved Gore as the main villain should have been spanned over multiple movies leading up into it. Kind of like over time.
At least one phase.
I feel like, yeah. Like maybe three extra Thor movies.
It doesn't even have to be Thor.
It doesn't have to be Thor. Thor's about to be done. End it.
Here's the thing that I have now. Taika Waititi's coming on for Thor 5.
Why?
It should have ended at 3.
Yeah.
There should not have been a fourth movie.
After the third one was good.
Ragnarok was my favorite Thor movie.
Absolutely. Great. It was great a movie. Good depiction of Thor.
Yeah.
Just like, he's enthusiastic, but still understands seriously.
He's a fire spirit.
And Hulk in that movie? Perfect. I loved that
adaptation.
They
characterized him well.
They made him kind of like exactly what you'd expect Hulk to be. He's not a brute. He's a
guy. That's why Bruce Banner, he has dissociative identity disorder. I think there's like 112 different versions of the Hulk that he can turn into.
There's one Hulk I remember and specifically where it's like the superior version of Hulk where he's got it's kind of like an end of the world situation version Hulk where he's like balding and he's got a beard. I forget
Maestro
is my favorite Hulk.
Such a cool idea, but
because he's smart.
Yeah, because he's actually like
he's smart.
This is the first
version of the Hulk other than Banner Hulk,
which is
can read, which is like that's not even like a laugh. That's impressive for the Hulk.
Yeah,
yeah, because Hulk is just he's just supposed to be like this brute character that just jumps in.
And that's how they characterized him in the movies for a while.
And then Ragnarok just made him what you see Hulk in every other piece of media with him. Like, you see any
animated shows,
movies, he's talking, he's thinking, he's an actual character. He's not just an animal, he's something. And Ragnarok did him well.
Mm.
So well. And the design for the armor, the weapons he had. Oh, dude.
Because they ripped it straight out of World War Hulk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was so good. Oh. And we need a World War Hulk movie so bad. It would be.
And it doesn't even have to be an MCU movie. I would watch an animated adaptation.
It would be so good.
I think that is the best route for Disney and Marvel to go down now. With their live action shows and movies starting to fail, they need to take a DC and Warner Brothers route. And they need to adapt some of their darker storylines into some, like, actual, like, gory...
Not even the dark stories.
Just
ones with a lot of action and actual, story development.
Comics directly to animation.
Exactly. Get on this.
Get on it. Because, listen...
Batman Hush.
Yeah, Hush.
Is so good. It's chef's kiss.
I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen that one. So
it is.
It's amazing. But
it's
one of the
direct thing from the comics.
Mm-hmm. One of the best castings in DC history would be Harley Quinn.
Oh yeah,
Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie is one of the best castings I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's next to Heath Ledger and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
she just embodies that character.
Yeah, and then for the animated stuff, Mark Hamill as Joker.
Oh yes. Dude,
Conroy as Batman.
And
rest in peace,
Kevin Conroy. He is, as far as I'm concerned, Kevin Conroy is Batman.
Yeah, he's the he was in everything.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
It's like
Arkham
how,
Games.
Yeah. It's like
all of it.
How Peter Cullen has been Optimus Prime since the original animated show.
And he knows the character, too. Like, he's in character every time he gets behind the mic.
The character, because he knows the character and how he's supposed to be.
His cadence is everything.
He even goes on to shows talking about, you know, what he likes to say when he's doing Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how the character's supposed to sound.
They did a poll on Twitter for Transformers 3 when Bay was directing it.
And
at the end of the movie, they had people vote on a line that Optimus would say at the end of the movie or say during the movie at all. And the winner of it was, "I'm going to turn into a truck now." And they cut it from the movie. And I am so mad at that. Because can you imagine Peter Cullen at the end of Transformers 3 just like, to any Autobot out there listening, I am going to turn into a truck now. And then it's the end of the movie. And that would have been...
It would...
Listen, that would have been the perfect note, just because it's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I don't want to say it fits Optimus Prime, but it kind of fits the aspect of him, like the lighthearted version of Optimus. It's just kind of... He's
at the end of the day, what Optimus Prime is as a character is he's a soldier.
He's the backbone of the Autobots.
He wants to not have to be a soldier.
Yeah, he wants everyone to just kind of, you know, exist. Chill.
Yeah,
everyone hang out.
Have you seen the newest movie?
I want to
see. Is it good?
It is fantastic.
I need to see it.
The effects.
Are they good?
Oh yeah, they're good. They are on par with Bay, and they have, here's the thing for me, they characterize they make the characters like they would be in G1, like a Gen 1 with the cartoons.
Let me ask, so
you've seen... back in the 60s, isn't it?
It's in the 90s.
Since you've seen the movie, I want to ask your personal view, do they focus more on the Transformers or the people in the movie?
Both? It is an equal...
That's good.
That is
representation.
That is awesome compared to Bay. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I liked Michael Bay's Transformers. The first one, probably the best one he made. Second one was good. Third one, also pretty decent. But 4 and 5 just kind of.
The four and five was during the writer's strike in 2008.
Yep.
So they didn't have any writers. So they pretty much
the problem.
Warner Brothers like, ooh, this movie franchise is doing really good. Let's just make this. It's easy to make. Bob, put it out there.
Yeah,
make some money.
Just
instead of, you know, wasting millions of dollars, you could just, you know, kept in the closet.
The problem with me in the Bay movies is that Michael Bay forgot his own story when he was making the movies.
Mm-hmm.
His movies contradict themselves 4 or 5 times in the franchise. So at the end of Transformers 1, Bumblebee talks.
Yeah,
like in his voice, and Optimus is just like, yeah, okay. Like, it's a normal occurrence for him to talk in his normal voice. Yeah, and then in Transformers 5, Bumblebee, he talks again, different voice, kinda less modulated, and then Optimus is like, I have not heard your voice since Cybertron fell. And it's like, no, you heard it in the first movie, like, 4 years ago.
Yeah, he also talks using his radio on WBDG FM HD1 Indianapolis.
That's a good plug there,
like,
man.
I liked that idea for Bumblebee. That he lost his voice and he used the radio to talk. Like, he just constantly jumped between things.
Here's the thing for me.
It was a good concept.
So the lore that they had established for Bay, Bumblebee lost his voice in the war for Cybertron because Megatron just,
you know, ripped it out.
Ripped it out.
Kind of like in the, you see it in the Cybertron games.
Yeah.
Here's
the thing though. That's not how it was for a while.
Yeah.
In all of the cartoons before Michael Bay came on as director for Transformers 07, Bumblebee talked.
Even in G1.
In full sentences. Bay did his movie, Transformers Prime, Bumblebee doesn't talk. In The War for Cybertron and Fall of Cybertron, Bumblebee doesn't talk. They came after the Bay movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Bumblebee.
Oh, Bumblebee was good.
Bumblebee is my favorite Transformers movie.
It
established a new universe.
Yeah.
New continuity. It shows us Bumblebee losing his voice.
It shows also the development of Bumblebee as the scout for the Autobots. Character. He's not just kind of... Now, they did Cliffjumper dirty.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. He's my favorite character in Transformers, but in every adaptation, he just does not do well, except for G1.
Nah.
G1's the only one where he has, like, a happy ending, but everything else, it's just... Like, even in Prime, he did not have a good end.
No.
And it was probably the best design for Cliffjumper was...
You got anything about Transformers?
I just know about the writer's strike and how the 4 and 5 was just not good after the writer's strike. Because they brought in and they wrote down on paper lines as they were going along as a movie. Michael Bay is great director, but 4 or 5 movies and you forget about... You can't go back and watch the movies.
He forgot his lore. He set up... like 4 different origins of the Transformers movies.
I just think, like, how do you let that slip? How do the producers let that slip by?
I don't know.
That has to go through quality assurance.
Right.
Like, because somebody's got to be...
They knew that the movies worked because they were action-packed and explosive and violent.
But it's got to make sense. So that means somebody looked over it all and was like, yep, this all goes well together. Let's push it out. And it didn't.
Because the producers aren't paying attention to if it's a cohesive story. They're paying attention to, will this make money?
Yeah.
If it looks aesthetically pleasing.
If it looks good and it might sell good, put it out there.
Yeah. So that was the reason that the 4 and 5 didn't do great.
Like, and they were good. They were good. Like, they were visually good. They
visually, were good.
I didn't like the way they
but
wrote.
They were following storylines that didn't exist.
I didn't like the way that Shia LaBeouf is written out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
Shia LaBeouf was killed off screen.
Was,
out of the movie?
Was he killed? I thought that...
Nope, he never died on screen. They just wrote him out.
Just wrote him out, and then they replaced him with Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah. Yep. Honestly, I mean, Mark Wahlberg in it, I didn't... Meh.
As
not a bad casting.
Cade Yeager. That's what they named the guy.
They named him
Yeager.
Cade Hunter.
They should have just named him Aaron Yeager
Cade
at
Yeager.
That point.
Okay. Yeah, just pull an Attack on Titan. That's what his name is now. Yep.
But the thing that I think really set off 4 and 5 was how they handled... Everything was because, like, Stinger, that was a pretty cool idea. They could have brought in Wasp, you know, the basic copy of Bumblebee, the original.
From the comics and from everything else past.
Galvatron, that was messy.
That was messy.
It's like...
Because Galvatron is a separate entity.
Yeah,
you just took Megatron and gave him a new name.
Well, I mean, Galvatron is Megatron, just purple. Yeah. But he got that from Unicron. And then the other part, making Earth Unicron was such a dumb move. It upset me. It upset me greatly.
Well, here's the thing. Even in, like, the comics and in G1, Earth is a Transformer.
Well, yeah, but...
It is a planetary Transformer,
but it's
not
Unicron. Unicron is completely different.
Unicron's its own planet. Cybertron is its own planet, and also it's also a Transformer.
I saw the G1 adaptation for Unicron, which is probably the sickest part of watching Transformers growing up, was just seeing a massive planet just with a bunch of spikes for a mouth. Just was so... Oh,
it was tight.
It was so cool. And Scorponok.
Oh, yeah.
Terracons. Oh, dude. Trypticon. Oh,
yeah.
Dude,
end of the day, Transformers are cool.
It's cool.
When you do them right.
When you do it...
And the newer movies are doing it well.
That's
the thing.
They're
so
patching up the
Bumblebee
holes.
Sets up a new continuity, and it establishes, like, the G1 continuity.
Yes.
That's what it does, because it starts off on Cybertron.
Yeah,
which is that is the first time, in the Transformers franchise that a movie has opened seeing the Transformers.
And not only that, but the designs of them.
It's
instant replicas,
perfect.
Like Shockwave, Soundwave, all the Decepticons, all the Autobots.
Nostalgia incarnate.
Perfect.
They look exactly like they should.
They were beautiful, man.
That's why that was my problem with the Bay movies. He just wiped them clean. He was like, hey, but what if we did this and we made them look like Mad Max cars?
Yeah, like, okay, one major comparison that I'd like to make is Soundwave. He's one you can always lay back on. Soundwave in the Bayverse was cool, but Soundwave in the Bumblebee movie for 1 second was the coolest thing besides Shockwave.
Shockwave has never had a bad design.
He's because it's simple. Cyclops eye, one hand, one blaster, just sick looking. They just, Starscream.
Even the Bayverse Shockwave
was
looks
cool.
Clean.
It was just like this, what's the...
He was like a...
He
behemoth.
Looked monstrous.
He was a behemoth.
You look at him and you go, that guy is a threat. That giant worm thing he made, that thing is terrifying.
Thing
he's
for me.
Terrifying.
Listen, so, in every other adaptation, Shockwave is like nice and cubey, right?
He's
bulky,
clean.
Cubey, right?
Yeah.
In the Bayverse, he is smooth. He looks muscular. He looks alien rather than robotic.
Exactly.
And that makes him threatening and that makes him awesome.
And his voice, dude. You can never get Shockwave's voice wrong.
No.
Like, it's just simple.
Mm-hmm.
The way he talks, the way he acts, it's just simple, and that's what makes him terrifying is he's simple. Like, you ever seen any of the comics for Shockwave?
Oh, yeah.
He's a terrifying character.
He just doesn't give a crap. That's his whole thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
He just exists because he wants something.
And he wants to, he exists in search of logic. That's his whole thing. And he does not care about emotion or what's right or not. He follows logic.
Yeah, that's why I love his adaptations in just about everything. In G1, just kind of running Cybertron for the heck of it. In the games were so good. Both of those games were War for Cybertron.
War and Fall.
And Fall of Cybertron. Their depictions of Shockwave just as being like this mad scientist that thinks what he's doing is right.
Yeah.
And him making the Dinobots, the Insecticons, which are also really
those
cool.
Those are cool, yeah.
I can't wait to see them like in live action.
Oh, because you know that that's going to happen.
That's going to happen. And they're going to look sick
they're
when they come
out. They're going to be tight.
They're just so cool.
Another thing, it's just I think giant robots are where movies should start going more.
Pacific Rim?
Pacific Rim is exactly
it's
where I was going.
It's such a good example. We don't talk about the second one, though.
No, not the second one. We need to take...
First very good.
Oh, yeah. We need to start taking some pages out of Japan's book because they got it right when it comes to giant robots fighting each other. Because
it's cool.
It's cool.
And you can make a story
around
it.
Have you ever watched Real Steel?
Real Steel? Yes.
With Hugh Jackman?
Yes.
That is the
one of the best movies I've
best
ever
movie,
seen.
One of the best movies... One of the best robot movies I've ever seen because the effects were incredible.
The
action father, was...
The father-son vibe was so
the dynamic,
good.
And Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. It's great.
Everything worked about it from action, people having robots punch robots, people punching people, to just the story in general.
Yeah.
It was a movie that made you connected to the characters.
If any movie has ever deserved a trilogy, it's Real Steel.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
I think they should make a new one just where he's
older. Bring it
in.
I need to see another Adam.
Yeah.
I need to see Adam again.
They
were setting something up at the end there where Adam was starting to develop intelligence.
Yeah. You know what would be really cool? Is a prequel with Hugh Jackman as a boxer. And then
a
sequel.
Boxing movie?
Yeah. That. And then a sequel, you know, just kind of like showing Hugh Jackman going from being this boxer to seeing kind of the world change from, you know, actual fighting to
robot
fighting.
Yeah.
And then a sequel with the story going forward. Mm. It'd be beautiful.
Did y'all see the new costume design for Deadpool 3?
Yes.
For Wolverine.
Deadpool 3.
How he
Wolverine,
finally...
They finally have him in a yellow and blue costume.
They have him in the comic book outfit.
I'm so hype.
I am so excited for that.
I cannot wait to see that costume.
So here's my running theory for this. This movie is Deadpool Kills the Fox Universe.
Yeah.
That's definitely what's happening.
That would be
We're
going to
have Deadpool fighting the X-Men.
And he's just going to walk in. I feel like at the end of the movie, he's just going to walk into Avengers Tower like, yo.
Yo. Hey,
guys.
Hey.
Hey, I'm here now, by the way.
And I think that it's going to be something to do with Loki, that how he gets there in the first place.
Probably.
Because they're doing Loki in season 2 before they do that movie.
Yeah.
So I want to bring back to Pacific Rim.
Yeah, because that was such a... It was first time I ever saw it. The soundtrack, the machines, the kaiju.
The concept was just very, very good.
Oh, yeah. It was not something that we had seen in Western media yet.
And also, the intro log that they went with, it's... You know, most movies that have that... don't do well. Because, you know, if you have to give context to what's happening, it's not very good.
But Pacific Rim deserves context.
Yeah, they did it simple.
Yeah.
Which was good.
They explained it like it was a documentary.
Yeah,
almost.
We looked up. No aliens came by. Then a hole opened in the ocean, and they just kind of started coming, and they didn't like us.
Yeah.
And they
built up lore over time that we started winning after a little while, and then we started making toys, because that is exactly what American capitalist society would do.
It's what
they
would make
toys about monsters that are killing people, right? That was what they would do.
And when the people start winning, make toys.
Make toys.
Exactly.
Because you're starting to win. But the thing that I love most about Pacific Rim is that it is not a robot fighting monster movie, technically. What it really is it's people fighting for survival. They are not fighting a monster per se,
and the robots are just there.
The robots are the weapon that they use.
Yeah.
They are not described as a huge part of the movie. You are seeing people fighting to stay connected.
Alive. Yeah.
That's what they're doing. That's the whole point of the movie. You have to stay connected with the people that you're fighting with in order to survive, and I love that
in
a movie.
Such a good concept.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing with the main character, he being the second person ever to pilot a Jaeger solo, that's good character building.
That's cool.
Yeah.
See, that's really cool. If you say, oh, yeah, this doesn't happen because bad things happen if you try it, and then you go do it, and it's successful, it looks cool.
It looks cool.
The soundtrack makes the when that happened.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
The music when that happened. Oh, my.
The effects, God, too.
The VFX.
For me, I feel like Pacific Rim was a love letter to, like, mech anime.
Every single big robot, big machine show, game, movie, whatever, it was like a thank you for making this idea.
Every single Gundam fan in existence cried when they saw that movie because they realized, oh my God, it looks so much better in live action.
Oh, and yeah. then they made the second one.
And then I cried because it was not as good as the first one.
It had good designs. Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. The machines were the designs.
The machine and the fights were cool, but they messed up the lore.
But it was obvious that that was their main focus and not
you know, story.
Not the actual
development.
Have you seen the Netflix series?
No, I have not. I didn't even know there was a Netflix.
There is an animated Netflix series on it, and I went into it with a grain of salt because I did not think it was going to be good.
And
it's good.
It's good? Like,
it is good. It takes place on the Australian outback after Uprising.
Okay, we're going to Australia. That's a neat concept.
However, none of them talk in an Australian accent because they're refugees.
That is upsetting.
But there is a whole spiel of the kaiju starting to evolve into human disguises.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Ooh. Which is a thing that I love. And I think we should talk about later when we have time because it looks like we are running out.
We are running. I was going to do that.
I did it for you.
Well, thank you all regardless for listening to our spiel, our nerdy, geeky spiel because, oh my God, I love big robot
I love stuff. Big robots. I like big monsters. And I like movies that no one else does.
And I like trying to end the show.